I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is A State of Texas by the Old 97. My favorite Dallas band. I think I probably tend to play them a lot when the Grizzlies play the Mavs. I don't think I played that song before, so there we go.
All right. Mavs tonight. Is it a big game?
I mean, sure. I mean, in the context of a regular season, it's the game, you know, it's a national TV game. The team one place above you in the in the standings, late in a playoff race, or in as a playoff race is heating up, you know, Luka Doncic and Ja Morant, the two best league guards from the past two drafts, I guess. So, yeah, it's a big game.
It is interesting. Like, big games, I was trying to think, like, what defines a... Partly because the Grizzlies, in the NBA anyway, there aren't big games like what in college football. They don't mean as much. There's usually 82 of them, and... So each game, of course, doesn't mean as much. There have been times when the Grizzlies have been locked in some titanic struggle. I forgot what year it was. There was one year I actually, you know, back when we used to travel to all the games, I didn't travel to the games as a columnist, but there was one year when they were, I think it was the year that Mark was hurt maybe early, and they had to fight at the very end to get into the playoffs. And I went on a swing that took me to Phoenix and L.A. and whatever else. They were, you know, tooth and nail. Every game mattered. Of course, that's not the typical state of things. It's also true that it feels like this year, because the Grizzlies themselves are focused on process, and the big games are going to be 2 years from now, it feels like.
I think we bring very much a college mentality still to stuff in Memphis, even after 20 years of the Grizzlies. But in the NBA, to me, it's about the quality of the game. And the quality of the game is something you can't predict. It happens.
Right.
And the greatest games in the regular season are not games you knew ahead of time or big games or great games. They become great games. You know, we remember the triple overtime with Marc Gasol hitting the three-pointer off of 1 foot against the Spurs.
Right.
We remember the big comeback against Sacramento. The trappings of a big game is something you talk about ahead of time, but whether a game is great or not is something that happens on its own.
Right. Okay, in addition to everything else, we have now Mark Cuban has weighed in on this. The play-in tournament is dumb. He called it an enormous mistake, and his logic is as follows. It's an enormous mistake because now there is pressure on us in a schedule that is packed anyway. Now there is pressure on us to, instead of be resting players as you sort of see where you're settling in the playoffs, there's more pressure to actually play your players. And combined with the packed schedule, it is an enormous mistake. My analysis of that is, the packed schedule might be an enormous mistake, but the fact that more games have meaning is indeed, it's not a mistake. What is it? It's not a bug. It's a feature. Like, it's that.
I think what we found out is we need to take the best elements of the past two seasons and combine them going forward, which it doesn't seem like that's what the NBA is going to do. The NBA had made changes last season to spread out games more and have more rest, and that's good. They made changes this season, you know, to de-incentivize, really over the last couple of years when you had the lottery stuff. they made rule changes to de-incentivize tanking, which is good. The compressed schedule is because of COVID, right?
Right.
And so what you need going forward is the same incentives against tanking combined with scheduling that incorporates more rest. And so to me, like, keep the rules you have, they won't do this, but keep 72 games, but then spread 72 games out over what would normally be an 82-game season. And let's do that, and let's go.
And then, in fact, every game would have more meaning. You'd have more great games, as we defined in the opening. I do think it points out, by the way, that if Mark Cuban's complaining about it because it creates an incentive to actually care about each game, like, it works for what, like, this new playoff format does, in fact, do what it was intended to do. A, it's going to create these dramatic games at the end, but B, up and down the standings, it creates more incentive to play and to care about every game, doesn't it? It seems like it's working.
Yeah, no, I think it is working to that effect. I mean, he's right that the compression of games is not good. That was a financial decision based on trying to get through this season and maximize the money to start next season on time. That's all that was about. And they did what they could in terms of, I think, the travel tweaks they did is another thing. I hope they will continue. I'm not convinced they will, but, like, the baseball style, like, you know,
right,
multiple games in a city, I think was a, you know, which limits the amount of travel, I think was a good move. I think they should keep that. I think they should take the best elements of their changes over the last two or three years and combine them going forward. I'm not convinced they're going to do that. I think there will be a reflex towards, you know, what has been the past norm. But I think they should take the lessons of all the good of the last two or three years that they've sort of forced themselves into and really bring it all together.
Yeah, they'll do some of them. They won't do that because they won't want to. If you get two games against Golden State, you don't want a back-to-back in your city. You know, you want those spread out, I think, just for pop and whatever else. I mean, I understand that, but I think you're – and you can't – if you're going to have that baseball-style scheduling, you can't exclude the glamour teams from it, right? You can't – so, I agree with you. I think it's pretty clear the playoff format is going to stick, and I think it should. I think, and even Mark Cuban is saying it's an enormous mistake in the context of this year. I don't think he's backing off of it generally. All right, there's a piece Tim McMahon did. We get to see Luka tonight. Tim McMahon did a piece where he talked to great defenders about how to stop Luka, including one Tony Allen. What did you learn from this piece?
I haven't had a chance to read it all. I retweeted it before I had time to read it. But I just opened it right before you called. I was glancing through it. Tony Allen says to take away the step back three pointer. That's what he'll focus on taking away. He also says give him a good hard foul early to set a tone and to let the referees know this is how you're going to play. Of course, you know, with Tony, it's the ref. Come on, ref. I'm first team all defense. This is how I play. I don't know if, like, Kyle Anderson and Dylan Brooks can do the same thing, but Tony recommends a good hard foul early in the game.
How will the Grizzlies play Luka Doncic?
You know, the question is whether Kyle Anderson or Dylan Brooks is the primary defender on him. The Mavericks tend to play. I'm not sure if Porzingis is back. If I assume he is. He did not play in their last game, but I think that may have been a back-to-back thing, so I'm not sure. They tend to play a lot of sort of wing-sized players, and so you can sort of move stuff around against that. So even though Kyle Anderson is the power forward, especially for the Grizzlies, I think they could orient their defense with Anthony Carter Luka if that's what they want to do. But I suspect both Kyle and Dylan will both spend time guarding Luka. And so those give you different looks. Dylan is the more Tony Allen style. I'm going to get physical and get right up in you. And Kyle is more the guy who uses his length to play off and still use the length to disrupt shots and poke away steals. But without crowding a player is typically how he plays. And so those are two good defenders with size who can give different looks. And so I don't think there's any good answer for Luka Doncic. But, you know, a Dylan Brooks-Kyle Anderson combo is not a bad thing to throw at him.
I think Dallas is disappointed in their own. They would have expected to be somewhere other than just slightly above the Grizzlies in the standings. What has gone wrong for Dallas this year?
Well, I mean, Porzingis has missed a lot of time. 29 and 25. I mean, you know, that's a record that would have you fourth place in the East right now. And so I don't know if it's that big of a disappointment for them. I think that the middle of that West is strong and fairly tightly packed. But Porzingis, you know, missed a lot of time, not as much as Jared has, but as sort of like Jared has. And they're in a tough conference. And so I don't think it's been – I don't think a 547 winning percentage is some kind of massive underperformance right. by the Dallas Mavericks this season.
Who would you rather have going forward, Porzingis or Jaren?
I'll take Jaren, and maybe there's some hometown bias there. But I think it's sort of hard to say because Jaren hasn't played yet coming off the injury. But there's less of an injury history. And I know there's a growing injury history with Jaren. There's still less of one than there is with Porzingis. Jaren is younger, and Jaren's tall, and maybe he's 7 foot now like he claims to be. Like, I don't think we know that for certain, but he's not like 7'2", 7'3". And guys that big, there's a history of having injury problems and trouble with their longevity. I think Jaren is likely less diminished by injury than Porzingis is now, and probably has a better, more likely track record of overcoming it and staying healthy going forward than Porzingis does.
Whose future do you want, Dallas's or the Grizzlies?
I just think Luka answers that question, by himself.
Right.
I think he, you know, if you're redrafting the league going forward, he's probably the number one overall pick.
Right.
And when you have a lead ball handler of that size, who is that young and who almost guarantees you a top-tier offense by himself,
right.
I just think you can't – it's hard to argue against just having that player.
Right. And I don't know what their other assets are. The Grizzlies have a couple of first-round picks. It wouldn't even up for the difference between Ja and Luka right now, certainly. But I don't know what they have in terms of other assets.
I think the totality of the Grizzlies' roster and assets is greater than the totality of the Dallas roster and assets.
Right.
And so that's why it's debatable. But Luka is just, you know, the NBA has tended to be, I mean, basketball, because you only play five players at a time and they play both ends of the floor, the individual player means so much in basketball. And when you have the number one young player in the game, it's sort of hard. It takes an awful lot to tip the balance the other way.
Jamal, Hollinger had, I was reading a piece by him the other day, he said there's an elite eight in the NBA, eight teams that can win.
Yeah, not anymore.
I was gonna ask you, is Denver no longer in the elite eight?
Yeah, Denver's in it. Yeah. I mean, when you take away your primary, I know like the offense runs for Jokic, and so it's not like taking away the lead ball handler for other teams, but you take away your primary perimeter scorer, the best guard on your team, second best player on your team, and that's for a team that was already sort of probably towards the bottom of that eight, then yeah, I don't think you could put them in that category anymore.
An elite seven. You have a piece up today about two food establishments. Tell us about them each.
Yes, it's primarily that one. I threw a little secondary at the bottom. I'm trying to do more than one item in these columns, but I've experimented with a street food column back in the fall, did a little test run, did four or five of them, and it went pretty well. So now I'm going to try to bring it back now that, you know, spring weather and vaccines and everything is coming back. And so the focus today was on a guy named Aaron Branch, who has a food cart out on the curb at MLK and Danny Thomas, sort of in the shadow of FedEx Forum.
There's a gas station right there, right? There's a, what is it,
yeah,
a map?
He's in front of a Mapco. He's not in the parking lot. He's on the sidewalk, but he's in front of the Mapco.
Yeah.
He may not be out today because it's a rainy day, and he said, you know, his off days are the rainy days. But, you know, for nine rainy day, you'll find him out there from 10 to 6, roughly, with his cart, AD's food cart, with a propane-powered griddle, cooking smash burgers and hot dogs and smoked sausages for $5 combo meals, blasting music while he does so with people gathered around getting food. So it's a pretty fun little scene.
What was he doing before the pandemic?
He was managing a valet company downtown. You know, car parking is what I gather. And then, you know, people stopped going out. And so like many people, like his employment was impacted by the pandemic, and he had to pivot to something else. And this was his pivot. And, you know, when they shut down restaurants at 10 p.m., he had his car down on Beale. And so when all the Beale clubs were closing, people were, like, out getting his burgers out on Beale. And he's bounced around to different locations, but he's been at that corner downtown on the edge of downtown for a couple months.
So I read the piece, and you write about his story, and you write about the scene, which sounds cheerful. You bought a Smashburger. You didn't tell me if it was good.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was not me personally. I liked it better than I thought I would, based on all the stuff that was on it. I'm not a big mustard guy, and I'm not a big mixing condiments guy. And so if I would have like ordered it with less stuff, but he's like cooking quick, and so he's not really taking special orders, right? So you it's not you get it your way, you get it his way. And so I would not have wanted, you know, mustard and mayo and ketchup all mixed together and let it, you know.
What do you get on a burger in your own personally designed hamburger or cheeseburger?
I mean, it varies a little bit based on where I'm at and what's available, but sort of my basic burger for me would be a cheeseburger with lettuce, tomato, and mayo.
Right. Okay, and then the other place that you mentioned fleetingly was?
Oh, Story Number 9. That's my favorite food truck in town, and they have a special dish every month. And so I wouldn't necessarily, like, you know, note their special dish every month, but it happens to be a curry dish, and Jennifer Biggs and I talked to curry on her podcast last week, so there was a little bit of symmetry there. And so,
okay. It's called what? It's called Soy Number 9?
Yeah, Soy Number 9. It's the orange school bus looking thing that you'll find out about town. It's a Thai street food truck. And I think it's probably the best. It's my favorite food truck.
And you have a favorite dish there. What's your favorite dish there?
I'm going to butcher the pronunciation probably, but it's called khao soy noodles, which is not an uncommon Thai dish, but you won't necessarily find it on the menu at every Thai restaurant. Like, I've had it one of my favorite places in the Twin Cities to go to. I'll have it a lot. I don't think it's necessarily on the menu at, like, Bon Thai and other Thai restaurants in Memphis, but it's basically a yellow curry with egg noodles and stewed chicken and pickled vegetables.
And delicious. We'll talk to you about tonight's game tomorrow. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.